I really like this idea of being able to acknowledge when something's not working anymore, even if it did work before. I just think that's really important. As I reflect on a couple of decades in the industry, every once in a while, there will actually be some sort of belief that someone holds on to a little too quickly. And I think we have an opportunity to question those things. You know, one of the simple ones is, how many attempts do you allow for a password? You know, yes. Because you don't want a hacker to brute force your password. At the same time, literally, I have a young son. He grabs my iPhone. He types in the wrong passcode. He types in the wrong passcode. And all of a sudden, I can't get in for another 5 minutes. From Cobalt at Home, this is Humans of InfoSec, a show about real people, their work, and its impact on the information security industry. I am so pleased to be here today with my friend and colleague, Jimmy Sanders. Jimmy has held security leadership roles at a number of different financial and technology institutions, including SAP, Pfizer, Samsung. He's currently running information security for Netflix DVD. He provides leadership to our colleagues in the San Francisco Bay Area as leader of the local ISSA chapter. He does so much more, and one of his really big passions in life is helping to grow and connect the information security community. Jimmy, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here, Caroline. Thanks for having me.
So I can't believe that the last time we recorded one of these podcast episodes was literally 5 years ago. You were one of the first ever guests on the Humans of InfoSec podcast. And I was just getting really excited reminiscing about the start of the podcast. And I was sharing with you that when Jacob Hansen and I first came up with the idea for the podcast, we wanted it to be really authentic. And I thought to myself, in my career in information security since 2005, my very favorite part has been the people. I have had an opportunity to meet some extraordinary people in this field, and everyone's career path is very distinct, very unique. People come at it from all sorts of different ways, and that's what I love about it. And so I'm so excited that I get to speak with you and you get to share your thoughts with our listeners 5 years later.
No, thank you for having me. And I agree. It's in terms of, you meet all these leaders and they have a very diverse path of how they got there, but you see a lot of common traits among them. And it's eye-opening. A lot of times it's not necessarily about how smart they were. Some of them were very smart. Some of them weren't the smartest person in the room, but their work ethic and their diligence and their continued drive is some of the things that were very consistent.
Jimmy, you used a very specific word just then. You said leadership. And I'm really curious to know, what does the word leadership mean to you?
Leadership is the ability to understand that your words have weight and that regardless of if people are watching or not watching, what you will do will influence people for positive or negative, because you can be a negative leader or a positive leader. And it's different than managing somebody. In managing somebody where you're just telling them what to do and that's your job role, where leadership is taking an ideal and a vision and getting people together behind that, and even if it's popular or unpopular. Because there are a lot of times when you may have to make a decision as a leader that may be unpopular, where as a manager, you just manage people and you just do what somebody tells you to do. And so for me, that's the difference when I think about a leader. When I see a lot of CISOs where they get the title of CISO or head of security or whatever, and they think that that made them a leader. It doesn't make you a leader. It just means you're running security for a company.
That's quite interesting. The difference between a title and a position and leadership. I've also never heard the term negative leadership before. Jimmy, I wonder if you would talk a little bit about that. I think that's a really important concept for us to contemplate.
So I've worked in many entities and I've had a lot of peers where the person who gets the best results is considered the leader. And they may be the person who yells at you. They may be the person who cusses at you. Or they may be the nice person. But generally, the person who gets the results, regardless of how they get them, sometimes of people like to say the ends justify the means, But one of the things that you see is that sometimes it poisons a well for people coming up. And so as you see the rise and fall of different companies and different leaders, you see that as the toxicity grows, the people behind them end up failing and not being able to replicate that success. Where if you see a positive leader, you see they have like almost a root of a tree, and then the tree branches out and you see all these other people that were associated with them doing very well. And you wonder, how did that happen? And so for me, that would be an example of how you can see what exemplifies a positive leader and a negative leader.
I think that's really beautiful. I can certainly think of individuals that I've come across throughout my career who were in positions with fancy titles and high up in an org chart who maybe were not super effective in terms of getting results done. And I can think of individual contributors. I can think of folks in management at lots of different levels who they're pretty far and few between, but sometimes people really do have a tremendous amount of influence, and it doesn't have to do with their reporting line. It doesn't have to do necessarily with who is their formal direct report.
And to me, as a leader, your job is to ensure that the people who are doing the outstanding jobs are getting recognized, and hopefully you're trying within your power to highlight them and broaden their pathway, enable them to achieve the goals they want to. Because not everybody wants to be a leader or in management, but hopefully you are doing your best to empower them to help achieve their goals. Because when they're getting empowered and they're happy, when they're supported and when they're valued, their work productivity skyrockets.
Yeah. I do think that team morale is a really interesting factor, particularly on security teams, where sometimes it can feel like there's not always a lot of wins. So we've almost got to emotionally anchor ourselves on something else, whether that is our mission, our purpose, the influence and the impact that we're having. Jimmy, what do you think about the role of morale at an organization?
Morale is absolutely huge. And it goes back to what you were saying in terms of the wins. And what I would do, and what I always try to do for me and my peers and employees, is that how are we even evaluating what's a win and a loss? Is it a win only when we do big projects? Is it a win only when we stop ransomware? For me, it's a win when anybody can just log onto their computer, browse the web however they want, and they never get a virus. Yes. I think that that's an amazing win. Where you hear a lot of your peers where they're scared to get on the internet and they have to do all these, you know, reverse proxies and things like that just to go to ESPN.com. So for me, it's working with the team, understanding what's within our talent level, what's within our skill set. Because if we're trying to achieve something that we don't have the skills for, and I'm saying that's the goal, then I'm setting us up for failure to begin with. And I'm not being truthful to my team, and that makes morale bad. But when we start setting the right goals and getting people in alignment, to me, that's how you get the win. People can go home happy because they did their job to the best of their ability, and we achieved the goal.
I do think that people want to win, and I do think that there's a big role that leadership plays in terms of setting the context and the expectation, just as you said, for what is a win versus what is a loss. And depending on how zoomed in or zoomed out you are on a particular incident or situation, it actually can be viewed in very different ways. I had a conversation with a colleague recently who is beginning to implement some defect discovery for the first time in their software development lifecycle. And I said, you know, one of the things that folks sometimes run into is there's a simple expectation that more security vulnerabilities found is bad.
Yes.
And I said, but it's actually contextual. If you're actually moving from a state where you have less testing going on, and then you're moving toward a state where you're doing more testing, good is actually finding more security vulnerabilities. You actually want that number to go up. And so it's not always intuitive. And I do think that folks have an opportunity to consider business context when it comes to kind of framing some of our security activities.
And it's not only business context, but it's also baselining and understanding what is the goal of what we're doing. Because one of the saddest things is when you have employees who are doing a job, but they don't understand the end result of why they're doing that. They think, okay, I'm just making a widget. When you're making a widget, there's no emotional involvement. There's no passion behind it. There's no goal alignment. It's just, you know, almost working at a factory where you're just stamping and okay, next, next, next. There's no ownership. And I find that if you really want people to do their best work, they need to have some piece of the game, some stake into it. So when you give them some form of ownership, where you start saying, we're doing more testing. In the beginning, we will find more vulnerabilities, but the vulnerability number isn't what we care about right now. What we care about is what is the vulnerability number now? And what does it look like 6 months from now? And what's the reasoning? Because it may be that we have more vulnerabilities because we went to a new code base or we went to a new programming language. So just because we have more vulnerabilities doesn't mean we're more or less secure.
Jimmy, you touched on something that I wonder about, and that is when you're working with folks and for one reason or another, they're a little bit too siloed, you know, whether they might be under the impression that their job is, quote unquote, just to make this widget, you know, just to perform this activity over and over and over again. I wonder if you have advice for our listeners, if any of the folks listening themselves might feel a little isolated, a little bit like, you know, they're kind of seeking more purpose in their work, or maybe for leaders who are trying to expose their folks to more business context, what advice do you have for these folks?
My advice would be first, understand what position you currently are. So as a manager and as a leader, it is your job to help motivate your team. So figure out what is motivating your team and what is motivating your individuals. Just because 60% of the people work better in a group doesn't mean that a group setting is always the best way to get the most productivity. Understand the people who like to work in silos, figure out why they like to work in a silo. It may be that they like to zone out, listen to music, and then they can crank out a lot of code. Well, if you're going through, you know, a rush of development, then cranking out a lot of code may be what you need at that point in time. But if you're in a steady state environment where you're not in a crunch basis, maybe you want to expose that person who thinks that they are always in a crunch to not change their whole behavior, but like slightly make it less sharp. I mean, you know, instead of them always being pointy, make it a little less dull so that they're actively not like retracting when you try to do a group environment. And so understanding the psyche of your employees, but also understanding that everything that you're doing is to a common goal. If they don't understand that we're working to, let's say the new phone is getting ready to come out, or a new, one of the things that happened at Samsung, when I used to work there, we had a phone that was getting ready to come out. Everybody knew that regardless of what happened, hail, rain, sleet, or snow, this phone had to come out at this date. So everybody would rush toward that date. But after that date, you're not in rush mode anymore. So understanding the psyche, trying to motivate people to a common goal, regardless of what their goal is, not everybody's working on a permanent date schedule. But whatever you're working towards, have everybody understand that. And that's your job as a leader, is to make people, or not even make them. Yeah, make them because you're employees, but make them understand that. And also one of the other sad things that I don't see enough of is firing people or getting rid of people who are not following in line with the goals and the mission. Because if you have a toxic work environment where people can deviate from the goals or not want to work in a group, I'm not saying work in a group as work in a group, meaning you all have to be together in the same room. But if you're not working in a group toward a common goal, then you're kind of setting the whole team up for failure.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the coolest things about a lot of the work that we get to do is it does involve a bunch of different people. We actually, none of us can do this alone. And we're going to be most effective if we're able to work collaboratively with our team members. You know, Jimmy, I want to make an observation about our conversation. It occurs to me that we've been talking about context for security work And one way of looking at that context is to look broadly at the objectives of an organization. And another way to look at that is to look at it personally when it comes to the motivation and the working styles of the individuals on the team, as well as the skill sets. You also mentioned the skill sets. You know, you got to design a person's objectives with their skill sets in mind, ideally giving them work that is interesting and challenging, but that can also be accomplished.
Yes, exactly. Because, you know, one of the little known secrets in most organizations is if you want to get rid of somebody, you give them an impossible task. And then you get rid of them, you know, because they can't achieve that task. But to me, that's just a bad hire to begin with. And so one of the other things that I think about being a leader is being able to own your mistake, even if it's hiring one of your friends or your peers who used to be amazing at job X and they get the job Y and they're not quite as productive. And so to me, that's a great leadership trait because it shows you won't linger and be stubborn on a bad decision. I see a lot of leaders who will fall on the sword on something that has worked for them for the last 9 years or the last 7 years and it doesn't work anymore. But they keep thinking, okay, well, this time it's going to work or something. You know, maybe this security model will work, whether it's zero trust, whatever the security model happens to be, or whether your practice. It's if you as a leader aren't embracing change and improvement, then your team won't embrace it as well.
You know what I like about that? There's many things that I like about that. And one of the things I like the most about that mindset is that it's very focused on the present and on the future. You know, there's also an element of humility and curiosity to it. You and I were just chatting a few minutes ago about our kids, and they're kind of in this, you know, broad age range. My little girl is in elementary school right now. And one of the things that I'm working on with her is the idea that when you're learning something, you're actually going to be quite bad at it to begin with, no matter what it is. You know, you learn to play the piano the first time, you're going to be pretty bad at it. You learn to do long division the first time, you're going to be pretty bad at it. And actually, the more you learn, the more mistakes you will make along the way. And so I really like this idea of being able to acknowledge when something's not working anymore, even if it did work before. I just think that's really important. As I reflect on a couple of decades in the industry, every once in a while, there will actually be some sort of belief that someone holds on to a little too tightly. And I think we have an opportunity to question those things. You know, one of the simple ones is, how many attempts do you allow for a password? You know, because you don't want a hacker to brute force your password. At the same time, literally, I have a young son. He grabs my iPhone. He types in the wrong passcode. And all of a sudden, I can't get in for another 5 minutes or whatever it is. You know? And so my kid has DOSed me inadvertently.
Yes.
It's almost, I think that's one example of something that sometimes we as security people, some of us take it for granted, like that's just how it is and that's how it's always going to be. And actually, you know, there's often an opportunity to just look at something differently and with fresh eyes.
No, for me, one of the amazing things is part of an organization, I use a mail. We send emails to our members. And the mail app that we use is enforcing multi-factor authentication on our mail app. And I'm still not a fan of draconian forcing certain security measures onto somebody who's actually paying you money or an end user. I believe in opt-in and I believe in opt-out, but I don't believe in enforcement unless there's been visible issues and somebody's clamoring for it. And so for me, when I look at security paradigms, I remember when PCI first started and a lot of things first started, change your password every 90 days. And people kept getting mad because security keeps making us change our password. Now we have to make all this, you know, long, complex passwords. And then the new narrative is don't make them change it that often, but make them have a secure password. And, you know, or now we're trying to go passwordless. And so for me, it's don't hold on to an idea, hold on to effectiveness. What are our end goals that we're trying to achieve? We're trying to make sure that the right user is getting into the right system at the right time. And whatever we can do to do that in the most efficient way, in the least disruptive way, that's what I try to implement.
Jimmy, one of the things that just comes shining through whenever I get a chance to connect with you is your passion. We've talked a little bit about what motivates different people, and I wonder if you would share with our listeners, what is it that motivates you?
So my origin story, I guess, in security. I got my bachelor's degree when I was 25, so I was older, and I went through several jobs, and from, you know, machine operator to a baker to whatever. And when I got into technology, my life changed because now you're making a different income. You're dealing on the tech side, so you're not doing manual labor. You're doing a lot of typing, and you're using your head hard, but you're not doing, you know, you're not like physically tired every day. And I recognized that there are so many people, because when I grew up in high school and my first years of college, I thought that just because I was good at math, that mean I had to be in engineering, not computer engineering, just engineering. And I was never good at that because I thought personally for me, it was boring. When I got into technology, my eyes opened up and I loved it. I loved it every day. And so one of my things even now is that every year I come out with a new project that I try to do in technology. And so my goal now is when I see other people that are aspiring to be in technology, I try to at least show them different paths that are available, because not everybody wants to be a CISO. Not everybody wants to be a hacker. Not everybody wants to be an auditor. So what I try to do in terms of is expose them that the opportunities are available. I was talking to somebody at a birthday party, and they were like, "Oh, Jimmy, I have a friend. They like to do creative writing. Is there?" And then I'm like, "There's something in the technology for people who like to do creative writing." Because one of the things, I'm not for sure if you noticed, is that a lot of times I get emails or documents that aren't grammatically correct. They may, you know, be spelled right, but they're not grammatically correct. So understanding that technology can empower you and your family, and what it's done for me, is that's why I'm still passionate. I love it. And I love to be able to meet peers who are passionate as well.
Fantastic. Jimmy, whenever I get a chance to spend time with you, it always goes too fast. A final question for you today. You mentioned that you like to do a new technology project every year. What are you working on lately?
So I've been trying to do some kind of automated bot. I wouldn't call it AI, but I'm trying to integrate all the different environments and find a centralized location, because I have my own home servers. So I'm trying to figure out something so that when I ask it questions or when I go through old documents, it's automatically querying that and it's helping me remember certain stuff. So it's not AI because I'm not that smart. And I personally haven't looked at the code for AI, but I definitely done machine learning before. So building a home machine learning server.
No big deal. Just building a home machine learning server. Jimmy, thank that you. Is so cool. Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Hey, thank you very much, Caroline. And thank you, everybody.
Humans of InfoSec is brought to you by Cobalt, an offensive security company. You can find us on Twitter @HumansOfInfoSec.